Good evening, and welcome to another Fireside Chat. This is your host, Lance White. Tonight, I'm delighted to welcome back a regular guest on our show, Liara from Operation Terra. Liara has numerous credentials in the field of science, including a BS degree in zoology with honors. However, she is best known and loved for the messages which she began channeling from a group of higher density beings who refer to themselves as the hosts of heaven. She had no idea that the messages would form the basis for a concept called Operation Terra, which has captivated the hearts and minds of many around the globe. So let's welcome Liara back to the show. Hello, Liara. How are you?
Hi, Lance. Things continue to amp up, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Personally and globally.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I thought maybe you could share a little bit more about the concept of Operation Terra and its present timeline, since you already mentioned, you know, things are amping up.
Huh. Okay. Well, this all began for me a long time ago, probably several lifetimes ago. But the more recent emergence began in March of 1981,
uh-huh.
when a being that I refer to as Christ, and some people call him Jesus or Yeshua or Sananda,
mm-hmm.
Appeared in my bedroom and put his hands on my head and called me to this path. I had no context to put that in, so a year later, though, he gave me a vision of the future, which felt very immediate and has taken a much longer time than I expected to manifest.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that I would be called. And on June 30th of 1999, this group of beings that I had in the meantime been receiving personal guidance from, called the Hosts of Heaven, asked me to deliver a series of messages via the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did that. There was a message a day for 11 days, and then there was a period of silence, and then another series came in, and then there was another period of silence, and then there was another series of messages. And the first two volumes of messages have been published in book form, and what they do is they lay out a sort of a map of the territory
mm-hmm.
of the times we're in from a perspective that there are these major cycles. There are smaller cycles and larger cycles and major cycles. And
mm-hmm.
the largest cycle we're dealing with is what is called in the Hindu tradition a day of Brahma.
Mm.
It's 4.5 billion years long. That's billion with a B, not million with an M. and it's the end point of this creation, according to them. And the springboard to a new creation. And there are many voices speaking now, and I've been given the job of speaking for this relatively small audience
mm-hmm.
that is part of Operation Terra. And Operation Terra is both a concept, that is the idea of what we're doing, and it's a body of information which is available at no charge in full from the website OperationTerra.com, OperationTerra.com.
Okay.
That's available to anyone in English, and there's also the messages have been translated into French and Spanish and are available at no charge in those languages also.
Mm.
Volume 3, when they finished Volume 2 in September of... When was that? I can't remember what year now. It was 2000-something. They said that when they came back, that Volume 3 would be different in tone and content, and especially the messages from this year certainly fulfilled that quality. And what they have said now, they've delivered their last message. Unlike other channels that, you know, have an endless supply of things to talk about.
Yeah.
The hosts do not create a dependence on them for information. They have repeatedly said within the messages that we need to go within for our answers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very hands-on with us. Those of us who are part of Operation Terra, at least the first two waves at the moment, are undergoing cellular purging of the entire cellular memory of 4.5 billion years.
Mm.
So it involves not only lifetimes on this planet,
mm-hmm.
but also incarnations on other planets and other densities.
Mm.
So a lot of us have been having pretty intense memories coming up as these other lifetimes are purged. A lot of this is going on consciously, and a lot of it's going on unconsciously. I know that I'm having a lot of what I call screen memories in the form of dreams that cover up what's really being dealt with while I sleep. And there's physical symptoms many of us are experiencing. But that's almost done now.
Hmm.
My job as messenger, in that sense, is pretty much over. And the messages, the third volume is available in full on the website and will probably go to press in January. What this signifies, though, is a major shift in the operation itself. What I've done and what I've known I was doing for quite some time was to provide the preparation
mm-hmm.
that would lead up to the culmination.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Operation Terra model, what we're looking at is an emergence of many different future Earths. The model that I work with, I think, has 12 different
okay.
futures. And Terra is one of them, involving approximately 0.1% of the total population of this planet at this time.
Uh-huh.
And that is broken down into three waves. The leadership is the smallest group, less than 100 people.
Mm-hmm.
The middle management, you might call it, is the second wave, is approximately 4,000 people. And the third wave, which is the whole point of the thing, is approximately 6 million people that aren't aware of this at all. And there, we have also a special forces group of about 3,000. And they're aware of Operation Terra, but they work pretty much in isolation on their own thing,
uh-huh.
and they're heavily involved in networking or interacting with others. They might be working as massage therapists or working with essential oils or
mm-hmm.
doing any number of other things, the key thing being that they are interacting with groups that would otherwise not be open to
mm-hmm.
the information about Operation Terra. One of the places that I find is most difficult for people is the spaceship element.
Mm.
Because when I had the original vision in 1982, I was shown a time of tremendous earth changes and
uh-huh.
social upheaval, a lot of chaos and fear and social breakdown. And then there were, at the very, very end, the sky filled with these beautiful circular white spaceships, and people were led on board
mm-hmm.
onto the ships, lifted onto the ships. And then the next thing I saw was I was on board one of the ships watching the Earth turning in space. And as I watched it, we weren't very far out. I mean, you could see it clearly turning. We weren't, you know, way as far away, say, as the moon.
Uh-huh.
We were parked in some sort of orbit around it. And I could see it turning normally. And then it was almost like a top that slows down and then topples over. And it slowed down and stopped and just hung there for a moment. And everything that wasn't the bedrock of the planet,
uh-huh.
the actual rock foundation, flew off, including all the oceans, just were flung off into space.
Wow.
And nothing was left except
wow.
the barren rock. And then it slowly toppled over. It looked like it moved through, oh, maybe 30 to 40 degrees of change in the way that the North Pole would be pointing. It
uh-huh.
went further south.
Uh-huh.
And then it began rotating again. And we were taken off to another place that was a huge sphere. And I've since been told that this is a giant mothership, approximately 80% the size of Earth.
Wow.
And we spent a number of years there preparing to colonize the new Earth,
uh-huh.
Terra, which I call Terra.
Uh-huh.
And in the meantime, while we were doing that, this unpopulated 3D Earth was completing her ascension and becoming her fourth density body, Terra, which is luminous, and if viewed from 3D instruments, would look like a blue-white star.
Huh.
So it actually is at a higher density, and it isn't visible as a planet anymore.
Huh.
At least that's what I was shown.
Uh-huh. What happens to the actual 3D part? Does it need to recover?
It kind of goes fallow. There is a wonderful body of work by David Bohm, who is a physicist that had to move to England from the United States because he couldn't get published. He was too controversial in the United States, and they was more open to do his research in England. And he came up with he was watching television one time and had one of those epiphanies that we sometimes have.
Yeah.
He was watching an experiment on the BBC, and there was a beaker full of a thick liquid. I'm not sure what the liquid was, but it had sort of almost gel-like quality, and it had a paddle in the beaker, and they poured some ink, the kind you write in a fountain pen with,
mm-hmm.
and poured some ink into it and turned the paddle one way, and the ink became dispersed in the liquid and disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And then they turned the paddle the other way, and lo and behold, the ink reappeared.
Huh.
And in that moment, he had this flash of insight into the nature of the holographic reality, what he calls the holo movement, from the implicate order, which is where everything is contained in potential, to the explicate order, where everything is manifest, and then back to the implicate order again. And this, I came across this information after I had had one of my many mystical experiences. I had asked to see the mind of God, and what I was shown was an undulating, self-luminous plasma. It was luminous from within.
Wow!
I couldn't see the end of it. It really was infinite.
Wow!
At least from my perspective, and it was lying there and kind of undulating very gently. And every once in a while, something would blurble up out of this amorphous, what I call the formless, the field of the formless, would form up. If you've ever seen the movie The Abyss, how the ocean water comes into their ship and forms up into an image of her face and begins kind of pantomiming her.
Yeah.
It was very much like that. It had that kind of almost viscous quality that the water in the movie The Abyss took on. It was almost like a gel, and it was animate, and it would come up, and it would take form, and it would do its dance, and then it would resolve back.
Wow.
And sometimes there were two of them, and they would interact, and then they would resolve back.
Wow.
And what I got from that experience, which matches what David Bohm had said and which relates to why the Earth is going to be doing what it's doing, is that, first of all, there's a lot of waiting. You can't anticipate when something's going to next emerge.
Uh-huh.
So we can't anticipate totally what's coming or when. And the second thing is that when something emerges into manifestation, it contains within it all of the seeds for its own completion.
Wow.
Just like an acorn contains all of the programming, if you like, that's going to turn it into an oak tree and that's going to grow old and die. There's an arc of experience contained in an acorn. Well, there's also an arc of experience in a creation.
Hmm.
And so this creation is about to resolve back into the formless from which it came, and a new creation is going to be birthed or come up out of the formless. And in between, there's this time of no thing. And, of course, when there's no thing, there's also no time, because time is a feature of the manifest reality.
Right.
And so I can't say how long it's like that, but to us it'll be like a blink. The hologram that we are is refreshed many, many times a second.
Uh-huh.
And just like the picture on your television screen or is refreshed, you know, it's redrawn many times a second, and that's how it appears to be moving.
Uh-huh.
But it really isn't. It's just a static picture that's refreshed many, many times.
Right.
And so what's going to happen is the big blink. We're going to have a major refresh cycle. So between one moment and the next, there will actually be a disconnect from this creation.
Uh-huh.
And a connection with a totally new creation. There have been other writers that have, and other channels that have referenced this phenomenon and called it different things.
Uh-huh.
But there seems to be at least some, not necessarily agreement widespread, because this is not a widespread understanding, but it was in the raw material and also in the Keys of Enoch by J.J. Hertak. J.J. Hertak talked about the respatialization of consciousness on the other side of the gravity null zone.
Huh.
And what he's calling the gravity null zone, I believe, is the space between the one creation and the next. There will be no thing, and therefore, of course, no gravity. There will be nothing manifest, so there wouldn't be any force of gravity. And the raw material basically talks about the planet Earth, going from actuation, that's what David Bowman would call explicate, or what I call manifest, from actuation to potential. So Terra already exists in potential and is going to manifest, and the counterpoint to that is that our planet Earth, on the timeline that leads to Terra, is going to resolve back into the formless and be fallow for a long time and restore itself. People are talking about saving the planet. The planet can get along without us.
It's probably much better.
It will. We are the ones that are at risk, not the planet. The planet existed before us. I mean, as far as humans walking around on it,
right.
The planet will exist afterwards. But what has happened to the planet is going to take geological time to repair. What happens to all these people that are on the planet? And the model I work with is that 0.1% are on the timeline to Terra. And this decision to go to Terra is not something that we make.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something we earn. It's not something we, store up points in heaven and that we're particularly blessed. It's just one of the choices that is available at this time that has been decided by the oversouls that create us in the first place. We don't source from here. The light of the Creator comes down through the lenses of the oversouls, and the oversouls are the cameras that project the holograms into these different space-time locations, and we are the result. So when you saw in Star Wars, and you saw R2-D2 project a hologram of Obi-Wan Kenobi to Princess Leia, we are no more and no less real than that. And I don't exactly understand how all the pieces fit together, but that's how it is. And the rest, the 99.9% of the people who are not heading to Terra at this time are going to go on the other 11 timelines. Some are starseeds and will return to their home civilizations and may, in fact, colonize on Terra from those home civilizations. There are quite a number of people in the New Age movement that will probably incarnate on Terra as babies who are born there from future generations, from the platform of future worlds. And they will go through physical death at this time. And then they will incarnate again. And some of them in future times will incarnate on Terra. Other ones will go on to explore many thousands of years of 3D existence. And they will think they are on Earth, but in fact there are, as far as I know, 12 different future planets going to emerge from this one shared reality. And that's the model I essentially work with. What is going on right now is my role of preparing the ground that I have been doing for the last 26 years, preparing myself first and then with the messages for the last 7 years, then that is over. And what happens next is this is all being directed under the auspices of the what is called in the spiritual hierarchy the office of the Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a vibratory position. It isn't a person. It's a place in the way all things are organized. And hierarchy is not meaning that some are higher or lower. It's just the way the jobs are divided up.
Oh, okay.
And so it's kind of, they're niches. Like you're maybe familiar with the idea of an ecological niche. Well, this is a spiritual niche.
Okay.
And so all the niches have to be filled in order for the whole thing to be fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this office of the Christ, and underneath that, and that is, as far as I know, occupied by this being that is variously called Yeshua, Sananda, Jesus, Christ, whatever. Okay. So, I mean, he has many names. His cosmic name, as I understand it, is Sananda, but a lot of people are uncomfortable calling him Jesus. I mean, Sananda, so they'll call him Jesus or, you know, whatever. But that's the being we're talking about. There is a step-down transformer kind of relationship from source all the way down through the universes and the galaxies. And each galaxy has its own central sun. And the central sun of this galaxy is overlighted by the central sun of the Andromeda galaxy, which is not the Andromeda constellation. They're different.
Okay.
And so there are consoles of these central suns. And the consul of 24 of the great central sun of our galaxy is presided over by Sananda, and there are 24 individuals that serve on that, and the liaison from the consul is an entity or being, a man, whose name is Lord Michael Andronicus,
okay.
And he is from Sirius Star System, and his job is to be the liaison between the Council of 24 and their plans for this transformation and everything that's going on now, and the fleet commanders that are serving the evacuation. Ashtar, you've heard of the Ashtar Command?
Yes.
Ashtar reports to Lord Michael.
Okay.
And it's in Tuella's books, and she wrote a book, a compilation of stuff about Ashtar, and Lord Michael is mentioned in two places in that book, and but Ashtar Command is from this solar system. There are also commands that come from other parts of the galaxy, and they also have commanders, and I call him Andronicus because there's a lot of Michaels in all this, and so I call him Andronicus because that's the familiar name I have for him.
Okay.
But Lord Michael Andronicus is... he is in charge of the evacuation and the fleets, and he has just appeared again. He came to me in 1987 and spent 5.5 months with me and then left. And then he came in again in 1999 to help me through a personal crisis and then disappeared. I mean, didn't disappear. He just was out of contact.
Right, right.
And then he has now come in and is with me and is taking over the reins of everything, because what is left now is the preparations for the evacuation and the evacuation itself. The third wave of 6 million people aren't really aware of what's going on too much, except they're kind of uneasy about what they're seeing going on in the world.
Uh-huh.
But they don't connect it with Operation Terra, and their oversouls have chosen for them to go through the times that are almost upon us in order to expedite their transformation and their readiness to go up on the ships.
Uh-huh.
The special forces work with those of the third wave, and it was on September 17th that the first and second waves we're told that we had reached density 3.8. When we're fully in fourth density awareness, and density is not the same as dimension, and a dimension is a vector quantity like height,
okay,
width, depth, and time.
Okay.
Those are dimensions. So a lot of people are very loose with their vocabulary. You talk about the fourth dimension and the fifth dimension and the 12th dimension. But these are densities. And spiritual density is inverse to physical density.
Huh.
Spiritual density, the higher you go, the more spiritual density you have and the less physical density you have.
Okay.
So fourth density is the next rung on the ladder up to pure energy. And that is less physically dense, but still physical.
Uh-huh.
And more spiritually dense, has a higher spiritual content. So that's where we're heading now. Most of us associated with the app, as we call it fondly, are really from even higher densities than that, but we have come here in service to the planet.
Uh-huh.
Many of us may be in healing professions and that, but we are here primarily in service to the planet. And we came to take on quite a number of tasks. We came here as volunteers.
Uh-huh.
We developed amnesia. We forgot who we were, at least mostly. I had lingering things that sort of kept me from getting
totally
too full, fully asleep.
Right.
But and then we took on a lot of the pain of this world to transform it within ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We also act by being within the Earth's aura, which is, all the way up to the ionosphere.
Mm-hmm.
By being within the Earth's aura, we act as sort of like we have acted as human lightning rods to ground the higher light of Source into the planet. And by doing that, we actually facilitate the cleansing. So while many people are trying to prevent the Earth changes, we support them.
Hmm.
And the reason we support them isn't because we're bad people or we wish anybody to suffer or we're trying to punish anybody.
Uh-huh.
It's because that's how the planet cleanses herself of these absorbed negative thought forms that she has been absorbing from human population over the millennia that we have occupied her. And so we are here in service to the planet. The oversouls are in charge of where everybody ends up going. That isn't our choice. We're not here to stop anything. We're not here to fix anything. And as the Elohim were the first creation of the Creator. The first thought of the Creator resulted in the Elohim,
uh-huh,
and they created everything else. The Elohim are vast fields of self-aware, intelligent energy.
Huh.
They are not embodied people.
They're
not embodied beings whatsoever.
Okay.
But they are co-creators, and they are at, I don't know what density they're at. They're right up there next to the Creator. And the first creation was all positive
uh-huh
polarity.
What
and not a lot happened.
Oh.
There was no conflict to spur things along.
Okay.
So then there was another experiment done, and duality was created.
Uh-huh.
And out of duality is all the strife that we see now, but it also created a very rich environment for experience. And this isn't about learning. This is another thing that is very common in the karmic educational system to think that we have to earn and learn our way out of here.
Right.
But in fact,
right,
my, quote, highest and most important lifetime came 500 years before my lowest and most awful and uneventful and one step out of the dung heap kind of lifetime
huh
came 500 years later. This is not linear.
Huh, interesting.
It's not linear.
Huh.
What it is the oversoul will project an embodiment
uh-huh
into the environment that has all the ingredients to fulfill the script for that lifetime.
Okay.
So the lifetime in which I had my, I was actually a minor world teacher that established a religion that is actually ongoing today.
Uh-huh.
And certainly was earlier than Christianity, Judaism, or Buddhism. But in any event, it's not linear. The highest one came before the lowest one, and that life, the lowest one, I remember being on my deathbed and thinking, is this all there is? That was the highest aspiration of that lifetime. That was, the rest of it was just pure drudgery, and I lived in 11th century France and in a hovel, and and I died in my early 30s having accomplished absolutely nothing but my own survival.
Huh, interesting.
So all of this is very counter to the beliefs that most people have about these times and the nature of spiritual progression.
Uh-huh.
In fact, what we are here for from the Operation Terra perspective is to provide experience for the Creator. The Creator desires to experience itself through its creations.
Okay.
So that's our reason for being.
So it's not necessarily, you know, a personal path with lessons and karma and all of that.
What karma, my feeling about karma is that it's an emotional charge. It's a residue of unfinished business. And I heard an interesting definition of karma, that if your life script calls for you to do something, your best way to not develop any karma is to get into it and do it with everything you've got.
Yes.
Because if you hold back, then, of course, you've left some unfinished business.
Right.
But I don't see any way off the wheel. Short of, I'm sorry, I'm coughing, but
that's okay.
I just got a tickle. Let me just take a sip of something.
Sure, go ahead.
The wheel of incarnation and what people call reincarnation, we actually don't reincarnate. We incarnate, period.
Okay.
The embodiment that's talking to you right now only exists once. All of the other lifetimes that I remember were other lifetimes that were created by my oversoul.
Okay.
And I can access their experience and I can access the memories of them, but I wasn't them.
Huh.
This one that's talking to you right now is me.
Okay.
This bag of skin, this personality, this entity that was created for this function in this lifetime in this location in the United States in this, you know, 2006.
Uh-huh.
And so, no, we're not. I have to say that from the subjective experience of separated consciousness, I am learning. I've learned to brush my teeth. I've learned to balance my checkbook and keep track of how much money is in there. I've learned a lot of things. I've also learned some skills in dealing with other people, and I have learned to listen to my intuition.
Yes.
Because when I don't, I am very sorry I didn't. And that is something that all my programming and schooling and conditioning tried to take away from me. And for a long time, I distrusted it.
Yeah.
And I didn't use it, and I didn't trust it. But now, sorry. The only authority I answer to is my Creator.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything else is relative. And so, getting back to Operation Terra, where we're at right now is the ground has been laid, the messages are complete, and now the preparation involves finishing up the purging of our cellular memory, the cleansing of all of that residual emotional charge, most of which is a negative charge, pain and painful and unpleasant emotions, because those make the greatest impression.
Mm-hmm.
Just even modern studies in memory the formation of memory in the, involves emotion. The stronger the emotion, the stronger the memory. The
mm-hmm.
less emotion, the less likely the memory is to be retained.
Mm-hmm.
In any given day, all of us have experiences that are foreground, that is, they're catching our attention, and background. And unless you have cultivated photographic memory, I did have photographic memory until I was about 25 years of age, and then I turned off everything at that point,
huh.
and I haven't turned it back on. But photographic memory is like a snapshot. You can go back and revisit the scene, and you can notice what color the window blinds were,
mm-hmm.
you know. But normally you don't tune into every single thing. You tune into certain things that are more of interest to you, and the more of an emotional charge, the more likely you will remember them. So we remember key events in our life, and because of the nature of third density, many of the key events in our lives, especially the ones that shaped us in our childhood, are painful ones.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the ones we remember the most. Well, I'm not going to do that again. You know?
Yeah, we have had a few of those.
Yeah, we've all had a few of those. And especially, so the people that are involved with Operation Terror are scattered all over the planet because these lightning rods were needed all over the surface. We're not formed up into intentional communities. We're in different countries all over the world. And most of us have grown up in and lived in isolation from all of the others. If you think that, you know, out of, what is it, 6.5-7 billion people now,
yeah.
we've got less than 100 in first wave and about 4,000 in second wave,
wow.
all over the planet.
Wow.
That's pretty thinly spread. So
yeah.
one of the things I've done in response to requests is I have formed an online forums where people who feel, the qualification there is for people who feel they are part of the operation,
mm-hmm.
may interact with and bond with the rest of their spiritual family,
mm.
And, you know, kind of buddy up from all around the world in terms of sharing the journey toward 4D.
Mm-hmm.
I've also recently started a radio show with you, the Operation Terra online radio show that
yeah.
is hosted on the Operation Terra site. And that also has a, for people who subscribe and want to listen to the previous shows and want to interact with others, that is by subscription. And the free shows are available every week. There's one new show every week on Fridays. So you and I just did a wonderful Christmas show.
Oh, yes. It's a great show.
Did you listen to it?
Yes.
Did you hear that music?
It's wonderful music, wonderful warmth, and I just recommend everybody go listen to the show. If
yeah, it's up for a week. It just went up today, so it'll be up for through Thursday of next week, and then the next show will replace it. And, of course, if you subscribe, you can always listen to it at any time. So that's what's happening now. The hosts aren't going to give us any more of a roadmap because they've already given us such a thorough one.
Yes.
Basically listen within, trust your inner voice, walk through your fears, surrender is the way through.
How do we learn to accept what there's a couple of questions that are kind of intermingled together, and they have to do with service to self and service to others.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we reconcile what appears to be good and evil in the world, and does that relate to there being a negative and positive oversoul? Is there some kind of battle for, just as there the oversoul has positive manifestations, are there negative ones as well?
Yes, there would have to be negative polarity over souls as well,
okay.
although I suppose they can switch at some point. But again, remember that nothing exists outside of the Creator. So everything we see, even things that we would label
mm-hmm.
as evil, are created by the Creator or in service to the Creator. The oversouls provide those experiences for the Creator that desires to experience itself in all the possible combinations and permutations, not just the ones that we might prefer.
Uh-huh.
So, yes, it wasn't until the creation of duality that this rich mix and conflicts appeared. Mm-hmm. And there have, from the memories that have been retrieved from lives on other planets as well, this conflict between those who would like to operate with power over,
mm-hmm.
or who for whom power is the whole elixir of life,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a master-slave kind of construct, and those who serve others from a cooperative and more everyone has value and everyone has their place and so forth. Those of us who are of the positive polarity tend to be pacifists.
Mm-hmm.
We prefer peace and love and joy and things like that,
right.
and abundance to conflict and competition and scarcity and all
fear.
Of those things.
Huh? And fear.
And fear. Well, fear, really, there's only two basic states you can be in. You can either be in fear or you can be in a state of love.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be in both at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, all of us who are human beings and still in the veiled state will oscillate.
Mm-hmm.
There are times
mm-hmm.
when we're more loving and there are times when we're more fearful. But those are the two states, and what the host counsel us to do is to move through our fears. It's contrary to what our instincts. Instinct is not the same as intuition.
Right.
Our instinct is to avoid things that would be painful.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to will ourselves into those areas where we carry our fear and carry
mm-hmm.
our pain to move through them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they no longer exist. They no longer have a hold over us.
Right.
We are complete.
Right.
And wholeness and healing are, they require this kind of inner emotional work. And my belief is that this is, we can't get off into 4D on our own. There are lots and lots of people that are promising you all kinds of methods for rearranging your DNA and activating it and magic potions of water and implants that are going to erase your karma.
Right.
And this master and that master has a method. But in fact, I don't think that's the way it works.
Yeah.
I really do. I am grateful for the host's very hands-on attendance. And they are working with us 24/7 right now. And they are disentangling us energetically from all of the other negative polarity beings that we have danced with over all these incarnations. And we're being freed of that to move on to a world where none of this will exist. But it's pretty intense. The process is intense. And the way to decrease the intensity is to surrender into it.
Mm-hmm.
Surrender is an action. It
mm-hmm.
is not a passive, it's not passivity.
Mm-hmm.
It is a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who's had deep tissue work can relate to this, because when the person is going in with deep tissue work, it can get quite painful if you're resisting it.
Mm-hmm.
And the person that did that for me told me that if it got to be too painful, I could just say stop. And she didn't back out, but she would stay where she was, and then I would breathe into it, and then I'd say, okay, you can go further. And what I felt, I still felt the pressure,
mm-hmm.
but it was no longer pain. And so there is something we can do to move into our pain or into our fear, and then it changes. It
mm-hmm.
no longer is what it was, and we move through it and move beyond it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that do you see 2007 as a pivotal year?
I see 2007 as a very tumultuous year.
Uh-huh.
I don't know that it's pivotal. My understanding of pivotal would be a deciding factor. The things are already in motion.
The decision's been made.
Well, we are
right.
already in the birth canal.
Right.
The labor has begun.
Right.
The tipping point came back in the 70s and 80s. Reagan actually sat on everything for 8 years, and that was the last window of opportunity with regard to the environment. If you see Al Gore's DVD, you'll see how since the 70s, how everything has escalated. And that's not just geophysically.
Right.
Everything, everything that we're watching is repeats, reruns. This battle between the fundamentalist Christians and the Muslims is a repeat of the Crusades. We are seeing things in this country with the erosion of personal rights and freedoms that were placed there by our founding fathers that is a repeat of the early years of Nazi Germany.
Yes, absolutely.
And we are seeing, you know, you see dishes from the 20s. You see retro everywhere.
Yep.
You see hippie things from the 60s,
yep.
The clothing, the peace movements. All of these things are just revisitations of places we've already been.
Yeah, absolutely.
The United States used to be a great power, and it's like the fall of the Roman Empire. I mean, there's just so many things that are all piling up. And there's this threshold out in time that can't be passed.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things were predicted to happen in the 80s and 90s that didn't happen.
Yes.
They were held off for whatever reason, but now they can't be avoided anymore. We're in it. We're in it, and one of Edgar Cayce's prophecies, I think, came to pass just a short while ago with this enormous quake in the Kuril Islands that has really not stopped having its effects since then. And he said when there was the breaking up of conditions in the South Sea, you will know it, meaning the major earth changes, has begun. And, you know, every time I open up my browser in the home page, you know, the Denver was shut down by snowstorms. So many people drowned in floods over here, and and record cold and record drought and record this and record that. And, the host said that booster rocket time, when things would get into high gear, would occur on March 20th of 2003. And in fact, in 2004, the end of 2004 in December, was the tsunami in Indonesia, and the earth hasn't stopped ringing like a bell since then.
Right.
And then in 2005, there was Katrina and Rita. And, I mean, it hasn't stopped, and it's amping up. And if you look at the data in the update on Gore's video of the DVD, there's an update from the time they made the movie in 2005, and there was an additional amount of data. And if anything, things are getting going even faster.
Faster.
So we're in it, and the hosts, I believe, have mapped out a way of being in these times with serenity. And with trust in one's path. And one of our forums members just went through a storm that has never happened. She's over in the Vancouver Island area in Canada, and they had 150-mile-an-hour winds. People were without power for 4 days, and everything around her house was flattened, but she was fine.
Wow.
I mean, she was without power,
right,
but
right.
There was no damage to her house. I had a couple of people I knew that were in Hawaii when Hurricane Iniki hit. They realized there was no escape from it. It went right over their house.
Mm-hmm.
They sat in the living room and meditated. They closed their eyes and meditated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Everything around them was flattened, and they had a few broken windows, and that was it.
Wow.
And so when the Loma Prieta earthquake happened in California, and the Oakland Bay Bridge collapsed, the top tier collapsed on the bottom, there was one thing that grabbed my attention was there were two vehicles, bumper to bumper, two cars. One man was crushed instantly, and the other man walked away with a few scratches, and they were in adjacent cars.
Yeah,
so it's just something I marvel at that when there are disasters, we tend to focus on the destruction, but there's also miracles that take place, too.
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time. I was noticing, I live in Northern California, and I was reading some changes that were occurring. There's a brand of mouse that's migrating to the high ground away from San Francisco.
Well, I was living in Washington State, and I was led further inland. I'm now living in Montana.
Mm.
And it isn't, I don't know, I'm watching where the earthquakes are going off, and still there hasn't been any that have hit major population areas.
Right.
But they're happening all over the place.
Right, and they're way long overdue. And there's even been some plumes seen at Mount St. Helens, and Yosemite's been giving a lot of signs of it becoming active. So there's a lot boiling under the surface.
There is, and I do feel that 2007 is going to be a very tumultuous year,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's going to come from many quarters.
Mm-hmm.
And the geophysical changes continue. They've been here.
Mm-hmm.
They're continuing to escalate. And I just, when I hear people channel that, oh, we've got it all fixed. We've
averted that.
We've taken care of it.
Right.
Enough people have come to the light. They mistake cause.
Yeah.
They think that if you think positive thoughts, it's all going to go away.
Right.
And that's just fundamental magical thinking and denial.
Yes. Yeah.
It isn't going away. It has to happen. The planet needs to be cleansed of all this stuff that she's taken on.
That's right.
And like I said, Operation Terra is here for the planet. And that's our focus. She is our creation.
Mm-hmm.
We are not her children. She is our child. We are projections of those Elohim. And we came together 4.5 billion years ago and
right.
created this sector of reality, and we made a commitment toward her. And now that's wrapping up. And those of us who are down here have to be down here in order to steward this light down into the planet to facilitate the cleansing.
There's a lot of talk about, visitations from other planets and various beings. What's your take on all of that?
It's true.
Mm, okay.
We have lots of people visiting, and not all of them are nice guys. Some are neutral. They're just observing, and they're curious.
Mm.
What's about to happen here is highly unusual. We're just a little dust speck at the remote edge of a fairly minor galaxy,
mm-hmm.
but there's a lot of interest right now in us because this only happens once in the history of a planet, and our planet has, Terra has a future that is galactic in scope, in that it's going to be like a living library of all the cultures, almost like a global theme park of all the cultures, positive cultures throughout the galaxy. And it's going to be colonized by all these different cultures that are quite different. And so that's going to be interesting. And so there's quite a bit of interest. There are the negative polarity beings. The Zetas are here. With their genetic interventions to try to save their own race.
Uh-huh.
They are not a service to others. They are a service to self.
Right.
They are harvesting this to preserve themselves. They're not bad guys.
Right, right.
They're just doing this for their own benefit. Marciniacs Pleiadians are reptilians that have, that from their perspective, have screwed up, and they've come back to one of these. They're time travelers that have come back to one of these probability nodes so that they can try to do something different and end up in a different place.
Right.
It's very complex, and there's a huge zoo.
Uh-huh.
Our guys do not do mass landings. They don't do mass sightings. They don't do anything to stimulate interest in other civilizations. That isn't their purpose in being here.
Right.
Others are doing that. Crop circles are clearly a form of communication. Our particular guys that are involved with the evacuation and that are not involved in the crop circles, but there are civilizations that are benign and benevolent that are trying to get a message to Earth as a whole to wake up,
mm-hmm.
and not too many people are listening.
It sure doesn't seem that way, does
no,
it?
No, and it's not going to change. And all those people that think that if they pray hard enough and get enough people, I'm not saying that prayer isn't effective,
right.
but they're not asking the other people that they're praying to change whether they want to change.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to me to be a form of spiritual arrogance,
mm-hmm.
to presume
mm-hmm.
that we know better.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like the fundamentalist Christians that think I'm dealing with the agent of Satan because I see spaceships. You know,
mm-hmm.
I've had experiences with spaceships.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just ignorance. And it's also very narrow thinking, and it's spiritual arrogance.
Yeah, yeah.
We have to be broad enough to allow everything, because that's what the Creator wanted to experience, everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny because I heard a little piece on Carl Sagan today on the radio, and they read something from one of his books, and he said he was the one that caused the cameras to be turned back on the Earth. When they first did the journeys out in the various rail rovers and so on,
mm-hmm.
and that was where we got the picture of the little blue dot of the of Earth, because they'd actually turned the cameras around. And,
right.
And somebody said, what do you think Carl Sagan would think about the state of science today? And they said he'd be rolling over in his grave.
I don't know. Carl was heavy in denial also.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, he wasn't necessarily.
It all comes down to economics.
Mm-hmm.
If you get like David Bohm, when you get too radical, you lose your grants.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I worked on a project that was fundamental, and we never got funded because it was too controversial. Well, one of my professors in college, Leslie White, who founded cultural anthropology, he said the only way you can get your theories to prevail is to outlive your opponents.
That's funny.
Things are just moving too fast.
Yeah.
There isn't time for the natural processes of the systems are breaking down. They can't respond anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Our government can't respond. When I look at all this campaign hoo-ha,
mm-hmm.
it's just more of the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
more. There's no fundamental change on the horizon. Nobody's dealing with the population issues. Nobody's dealing with any of these things except just trying to preserve the status quo as best as possible and selling out for more of the status quo, selling out to accept more control.
Yep.
And it's just going to
It's all
spiraling out of control, and more controls will be needed, and eventually the whole thing implodes.
Yeah.
But before that happens, nature will interfere.
Yeah.
So we've got a rocky ride ahead, and the hosts have given us a way of being with that in peace,
mm-hmm.
and without fear.
Mm-hmm. Well, Liara, we're approaching the end of our time now.
Right.
As always, our time goes by like a, just so fast. It's always fun to talk to you.
Well, great. And anybody that likes what we have to say can listen on our show.
Yes. Would you repeat how people can listen to our other show?
It's at the Operation Terra site at www.operationterra.com. And if there's always a link on the homepage to the radio section. There's a whole site within a site about the radio shows and the free shows. All you do is click on the link and it plays.
And I highly recommend that people catch that Christmas show, which is up now.
Right.
It's really heartwarming, and there's some wonderful music, and it's really worth listening to.
They're all worth listening to, but that one's a real
good one. That one's in particular. Yes, you're right. They're all good.
Yeah.
Well, Liara, I thank you so much for visiting with us again. It's been a delight, and I guess we'll be talking to you in the near future, and thank you for being our guest again.
Well, thank you for having me, Lynn.
All right. Good night, everybody.